Welcome to the Real Estate Dads. Our guest today is Sennett Eskridge, who was born and raised in Twin Falls, Idaho, and he's got a fantastic story as a father of five, who at the age of 21 found himself with four kids and trying to figure out what to do next. And he has an amazing story about overcoming the odds to eventually having 847 units across the country, a successful real estate syndication business, and a fantastic home life that he's worked hard to keep. So, Sennett, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So welcome to the Real Estate Dads. We're so glad to have you on. And Sennett, you know, we've talked quite a bit, you know, previously. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing that we were talking about before we actually hit the record button here, you're a father of five. And father of five, and as you describe, I'll let you go into this, but you have all adults. And if you're willing, let's get the whole story. How'd you meet your wife? And what was the plan with kid number one all the way to kid number five? And how has that journey started in regards to, you know, what you were doing in life at kid number one and then up to now? Because that should cover also, you know, I'll call it some of the work-life balance. I'm going to get you to talk a lot. And also, hopefully, some great realizations of where you are now. Because you also, how many units total do you have?
847.
847, which is just fantastic. And let's get into that story.
Yeah. Well, my story, there's a lot of twists and turns, and I'm going to talk about a few things today that I haven't talked a lot of detail with people. Not a lot of people know. So the first thing is, you know, you say I have five adult children, right? The youngest is 19. Actually, he'll be 20 in like a week. But my wife and I have only been together 17 years.
Okay.
But what that means is that I had a practice wife first, you know, which I learned all the mistakes. When I say practice, it was practice for me. I learned all the things that you shouldn't do as a husband and as a dad, right? So I started very young, as you mentioned. My oldest child was born 2 months to the day before my 18th birthday. So she's born December 2nd and I was born February 2nd. And so very young dad, didn't know, you know, really what I was doing. I make a joke about it took me a long time to figure out what caused that. And truthfully, it's just that didn't know what I was doing and didn't have any plans. And the first couple of years of my life was very much without direction. And, you know, I was working a couple of different jobs and had my own business at the time. And just between that growing kids and a growing family and working, I really just didn't have any really legitimate results. But then, you know, the second kid came along and then the third kid and the fourth kid. And really not a lot of changes happened in my life. But one day my wife told me she didn't want to be married to me anymore. And I said, okay, you can leave, but the kids stay here. So I found myself as a single dad of four very, very, very small children. And I'm 21 years old and living by myself and four kids and get this, in a 800 square foot double wide manufactured home.
Wow. This was not the story I was expecting today. And I'm so interested to hear more.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, Max, I don't tell this part of my story very often, but I thought a lot about what we wanted to talk about. And I thought it was important that everybody knew.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is definitely the kind of stuff that you're sharing, but I know that you're also not alone in that there are things that people go through with this, you know, and I want to hear Trevor's take on this also. I'm still waiting to have that moment where I really figure out how to strongly be an adult and you realize how kind of forced it is by life, I think. Trevor?
I want to hear the rest because you have 800 doors right now and we just left off where you're 800 square feet, four kids, single dad, broke. So please continue, man.
You're not kidding, Trevor. So I was broke, right? And I was working and taking care of these kids and I had help, right? My mom was around and my sisters are absolutely amazing. But there's no way that I was making enough money to feed all of these people and take care of themselves. So I don't tell anybody this, right? But I mean, I'm telling the world today and I was on welfare. I really was. I was the epitome of trailer trash. I really was. And I lived that way for a year and a half and just didn't have any real direction or any future in my sight. I was just taking care of my kids, spinning my wheels, trying to keep them alive, really all I was doing. And then New Year's Eve came along 17 years ago. I went to a New Year's Eve party. My mom was with my kids and she's like, go and have a break and go and just relax. And there's this girl at this New Year's Eve party And I've known her for a long time. She was actually, we met when my oldest daughter was very, very young. So I'd met her 5 years beforehand, and we just ran in the same circles and never really hung out or anything like that. But we were friendly and friends. And I sat in a bedroom with her and her son because she had a little baby at a New Year's Eve party. So we just kind of sat in the back room by ourselves while everyone else was partying. And we sat there and talked for like 3 hours. And then midnight happened, and I look around and I can't find her anywhere. And turns out she was in the bathroom when the ball dropped. But I got a kiss anyway. And well, I just figured out where she was and went and kissed
her.
She was hiding in the bathroom, right? Because she didn't know. She didn't want to be the only one not getting a kiss.
Oh, okay.
I found her. And I kissed her, and she never left. And she really helped me change the direction of my life. There are all those old sayings about stand behind every great man is a greater woman, or, you know, anything like that. And my wife truly gave me something to shoot for, a direction. And when she came into my life, it changed everything that I was doing. And it was the catalyst. She was the catalyst for what I have today.
This is great. So I know you're like, I've met you and your wife, and she's ride or die partner, awesome lady, awesome power couple. What did she do that really provided that direction? Did she just, was she like, just kind of had demands that you felt you had to live up to, and you know, or was it just she kind of saw a vision and you shared it with her? Or like, what was that like?
I appreciate the question, and it's very important, but it wasn't any of those things necessarily. It was really the belief in me. She saw something in me that I couldn't see. And she has always been my greatest cheerleader. And, you know, she's clapping for me long before I win. And even when I have a struggle or have a failure of some kind, she's right there to encourage me and say, you got this, and you pick it up, and you're going to do better next time. And so it's all that belief and that, again, that encouragement. And anytime I have an idea, some wives are like, you know, I want you home. I don't want you out there working. I don't want you out there busting your tail or anything like that. She's like encouraging me. Yes, this is a great idea. Go do it. You know, go and launch. And I'll take care of everything at the home front and make sure that everything is taken care of so that you can be successful. She's absolutely was the thing that changed it around for me. It doesn't have to be even an intimate partner, but a good partner in life that has your back, that believes in you and encourages you and supports you is absolutely life-changing. And that's what she was for me.
I completely echo your statement about that. That's so fantastic that you found each other. I have a very similar feeling with my wife that, you know, I felt, sometimes I describe that I felt like a little bit like a lost puppy before I met her. Not really, but I found her and she had so much encouragement and so much, because I think all of us, you know, we all have that imposter syndrome, every one of us. And, and it's funny because we have that as an internal thing, that other people see you and they go, no, you can achieve all these things. You do all these things. Like when you're telling me the story, Sanat, I mean, I look at you and I go, I never would have thought this podcast would have started the way it did with this very real, raw experience that you have. And when you say your wife saw this, I feel like she saw what we already all did and does and helps you. And I feel like, yeah, that's been something that, I hope that a lot of men are able to find, you know, for anyone who's listening, you know, I do think it's out there. There were a lot of guys who I met prior to getting married. And Trevor, I do want to hear your take on this, who kind of advised me not to get married. You know, a lot of older guys, a little bitter, they're in 50s, late 40s, kind of had this kind of offhand comment, don't ever get married, you know, and it wasn't like 100%, but I had some guys who would kind of say that. And it's so funny because I couldn't have felt different. I just felt like, you know, it was such a difference with what I found with my wife. And, you know, I'm so happy to hear that, you know, regarding yours. Trevor, what are your thoughts?
It's a great example of that's how freaking important it is to have that positive energy in your household. So it's like a key element of success. I've been in relationships. Sinan, I imagine that your practice wife, like you said, there was things that you could have done better. I'm sure there was, right? That we all could have done better. I've personally been in relationships, and I imagine you have too, that where there's a lot of criticism rather than support. Why did you do this? Why would you do that? Why would you pursue that? You know, where's your head at? Type of mentality, right? Stick with the safe and the known, not the risky and the unknown and scary type of thing. And then I've had a relationship that I'm currently in now with my wife is just like my shotgun rider. She's just down, you know, like whatever I'm going to do, she's about it. She's with me. And it makes a huge difference in your performance. When your partner at home is not supporting you, then you've got, that's always on your mind. It's like holding you back from really achieving your full potential. So it's super freaking important, man. And if you know, for the guys listening, if you don't have that, you deserve it and it's out there, then you should go get it.
That's right.
I would add to that, I would say deserve it. And I would say also work for it. You know, I think a personal focus of self-improvement, you know, definitely is something that, you know, matters. You know, one thing about, you know, the previous relationships I had is, you know, one thing that every relationship I had prior to my wife, whether we broke up due to my fault or the other individual's fault, every one of them made me better. They did. And it was a recognition of, you know, how to improve. And, you know, in that comment you kind of said where you kind of felt, right? You remind me of your wording, but you just said you didn't have guidance when you were kind of young.
Yeah.
Or there was you please correct me on the term, but you kind of said kind of there was a, you felt without direction.
Yeah, without direction. Yeah, exactly.
I felt like that, you know, often. I think that's generally a really common feeling. It's just, you know, where do we go? What do we do? How do we navigate, you know, life? And a lot of the hardships with, you know, breakups, unfortunately, carve that a little bit better. And then, you know, you find the person you're supposed to be with, that it really makes it significantly. You know, once you have direction, you can dig in. Once you have direction, it's easy to start doing the work. It's easy to start, or easier at least to start, you know, I'll say just putting one foot in front of the other because you have a course that you're going forward towards. And yeah, I can echo that definitely with feeling like it takes a long time to really, you know, find that true focus.
Yeah. I love the way this conversation's going and what you guys said about, you know, that every single person in the world deserves a person like that in their life. I would say that's the thing that I learned. One of the biggest things I learned from my first wife, right, was that I deserve to have the relationship that I want and that I wanted, you know, and I did have a lot of that criticism and those type of things, but really what it came down to was we just weren't on the same page. We weren't going the same direction, you know, and I don't talk anything bad about her. Like, I'm very grateful for her, right? She gave me four amazing children and I'm very grateful that that relationship happened because I'm a better human because of it. And it was, gave me those four amazing gifts. But yeah, definitely every single person on here deserves that relationship. That, but I also want to, you know, that it's not just magic, right? It's not, you don't just meet the right person and it's just like the snap of the finger and everything is great. My wife, Carrie, and I, we work on a relationship on a regular basis. You know, still today, we've been together 17 years. We're very happily married and we see a marriage coach once a week, not because there's anything wrong, not because we're on rocky terms or anything like that, but because we know it's good now, but it can be better.
When you started doing that, was there a reason that you started doing that? What was the impetus to go see a marriage coach?
Well, this is our third one we had over the course of 17 years, you know, and there was one time when it was bad, right? We were kind of struggling and we were arguing a little more than we wanted to argue. And, you know, we just weren't syncing up. And I said, well, I love you. And she said, I love you. And I said, well, I want to be married to you. And she said, I want to be married to you. And I said, well, let's go. Let's solve this. And so that time it was to solve a problem. The second time we were going through literal like seasons, like winter is a struggle for us. I live in Idaho. It's gets very cold in Idaho. And I don't do winter sports. I don't snowboard. I don't ski. I don't snow machine. So January just sucks for us. And so the second time we literally were just in seasonal depression, both of us. And it was like, well, let's do something about it. You know, let's see somebody that can lift us both up. And that worked. And we did that for a couple of years. And now this time we've been seeing this gal for almost 2 years, somewhere in that range. And it was literally, hey, exactly what I said a minute ago. Our relationship is good, but I think it can be better. Do you think it can be better? Yeah. Okay. Let's make it better. You know, there's a really good book, Jim Collins, I think, in Good to Great. And he wrote, good is the enemy of great, you know? And so you don't want to be comfortable.
Within those things, is there anything you can share that's, you know, an encouraging thing for other people to
to do within their marriages that are a benefit. And, you know, I mean, simple things. My wife and I mean to take more vacation. She's due here within another month. So, you know, we're a little homebound for the time being, but, you know, but that's been the biggest one that's on our list to do as soon as we can, is to start taking, you know, vacations. And someone recommended to me, that we have to go on a vacation where we don't bring the kids. You know, this is 1 day, if not two. I mean, the reason was that even if you do a date night, you still come home and you're still kind of coming home to take care of the kids. Is there anything, and I'm only giving an example, within the coaching that you're getting, what have been some of the things you're able to share that are you know, recommended or things people can implement?
Well, I've got three or four things that come to mind, no particular order. But what you said just a minute ago about, you know, taking a vacation without the kids, I think something along those lines is very important. Some people may not be able to afford an actual full-blown vacation, but, you know, even if it's go get a hotel room across town and turn your cell phones off, you've got to do something to make sure that you're working on your relationship first. Because here's the thing, your kids will grow up and then they'll leave. And who's left? Your spouse, right? So you need to make sure and prioritize that relationship. Because I'm in that stage right now. Two of my five children have left home. And the other two are grownups and they're basically roommates. I see them once a week and my relationship with my wife's all I have left. So if you don't take care of that and you don't prioritize that relationship, then you're going to have problems. There's a lot of people who get divorced after the kids leave because they don't have anything to be together for anymore. So in my opinion, that relationship with your spouse is more important than any other. Second thing is you need to have a vision. And you need to have values. If you don't know your long-term vision in life and you don't have long-term goals and you can't tell someone what your values are, first of all, get that. Second of all, make sure your spouse has that. Third of all, make sure they're aligned. If you're going up through life and your spouse is growing in one direction and you're growing in another direction, you're eventually, there's going to become a chasm between you. So you've got to be going in the same direction. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be doing the exact same business or, you know, anything like that, but you have to have those goals, those visions, and that direction and talk about them and make sure you're on the same page. You know, because actually you just said you want to go on a vacation, you said once a year without the kids.
This was just something that someone recommended. They said, you know, take a night off. And make sure that it's somewhere where, you know, you're not still kind of on duty was kind of their point. Like a dinner out is good, but, you know, if you can go some, like you kind of said, a night away, that was kind of their recommendation. So you just got to make sure you make that a priority.
Okay. Well, and I agree with all of that. I was using it as, I was trying to come up with an example, right? Say you personally want to go on a vacation to Europe once a year, right? And your wife is a homebody and never wants to leave town. Okay. Neither one of those things are wrong. But it's not going to work out very well. See what I'm saying?
Make sure they're aligned.
Yeah,
make sure
exactly.
They're aligned, or get them aligned.
And then the next thing about, you know, those goals and visions, you've got to make sure that no topic is off limits, and you need to talk about everything. So there's a lot of things in life that human beings don't like to talk about. No one likes to talk about politics unless you're a political pundit. You know, a lot of people don't like to talk about religion unless you're a religious figurehead. Most people, even husband and wife, don't like to talk about sex. But you've got to be able to talk about all of those things. And I would say, I mean, especially the sex part, right? Talk about it. What do you like? What do you don't like? What do you not want me to do? What do you want to do? Right? I'm not saying that having sex isn't good. But if you're not talking about it when you're not in the bedroom, you're not going to be able to fulfill either one of your needs.
That's some true advice, all of it.
So, Senator, what is it like now with your coach? Like, what does your coach do or have you guys do? What are those sessions like?
We start every session with just a check-in. How's it been since we last talked? Have there been any problems, any stress, or anything like that? So the first 5 or even 10 minutes sometimes is literally just kind of an update. And just kind of a decompress icebreaker moment type of thing. Once in a great while, we'll have what we call a stress reducing conversation. So something major happened in Carrie and I's relationship or in our life in general that we need to make the time to talk about. And so we'll do that in a pretty scripted way, right? So there's a script that we use and a certain modality of language that we use in that stress reducer conversation. But at this point now, it's most of the time where she's teaching us new skills or coming up with new conversations that we can have together and helping us explore parts of our psyche that we don't normally explore. Let me give you two different examples as a contrary point, right? Well, three actually come to mind. So we use a thing called the Gottman app. It's a free app, by the way. And they have these cards, and one of them is called a love map. And literally this card comes up and it's a guided conversation about, you know, when do you feel most loved? Another one in that same Gottman app was, what do you need in life that you're lacking? And you need to come up with an answer. Like you sit there. So one spouse asks the question, the other spouse, you sit there till you come up with something. And it might be, you know, a cup of coffee, or what you're really looking for though is something deeper, right? Like, last thing comes to mind that my wife said to me, I just want you to touch me more, but not sexually, nothing like that. Just put your hand on my shoulder, touch my hand more, stuff like that. Oh, we never would have talked about that if we weren't in that session. And then the third example that comes to mind, sometimes we explore deeper psychological things in our life. Like we talk about problems from our childhood and, you know, things like that, to let the other one in more and to let them in deeper and, you know, help us understand why one of us acts the way the other one does, something like that.
So you've been so open with us. When you were young, coming up to this, was your family open, or was this a skill you had to learn within these sessions?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say my family was very open when I was growing up. Not that we were not allowed to talk about emotions or anything like that, but we just didn't. I grew up with a single mom. My dad left when I was four, and I had two sisters. So I was actually the youngest of three. We were just so busy and always go, go, go. Like, we never had time to really sit and talk about feelings or emotions or anything like that.
Trevor, you have any questions? I'm going to move on to some of the business stuff. But we could unpack so much in this from right now. Do you have anything before I jump into some of the business things?
I guess just, you know, what is the best way to start looking for a marriage coach? How did you do it? How did you find a marriage coach?
Yeah, I have answers. I'll tell you what I did first, and then I'll tell you some things that I probably would do different, right? So literally the very first one that we did, we just kind of opened the phone book and said, found marriage counselor, right? That's what we did the first time. It worked out okay. It was fine. But it just wasn't very, we didn't think it through. This last time, we really worked on it, and Carrie, my wife, did the majority of the work. She went to our insurance company's website and pulled up all of the providers that our insurance company was contracted with, and started filtering them out, you know, based on, you know, different preferences. We decided that we wanted to have a female specifically, and so that really narrowed it down. And then we wanted someone similar age to us, you know, because we wanted them to be able to relate to what we were going through and that type of thing. And then she called each one of them and just learned about what their practice was. And she came down to three recommendations and said, let me pick the out of the last three.
Love it, man.
Yeah, this is great. You know, what I love that you said earlier was, you know, do you want to stay married? Yes. Or do you want to stay, or do I love you? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. Do you want to make this work? Yes. And then you guys had this kind of, after that was the commitments that, hey, we wanted to make everything happen. And, you know, and I love hearing that because it goes through, you know, the fact that you guys just kind of said, hey, you know, we're sure of this part. You know, the other thing is, you know, maybe more of a active task, but, you know, there was two people who were committed, which is, you know, something I think once you're actually married, you kind of get more than when you're, you know, single, or even in the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. There's another level to the marriage part that I think is hard for a lot of people who aren't married to kind of grasp, actually. And I think you kind of nailed it on the head right there with that one.
Yeah, totally agree there. You know, there's so many people that think that marriage is easy, right? So like we watch all these Disney movies with the happily ever after. It's really not. It takes work, right? You're two imperfect human beings and you have to practice at it. You have to work at it.
Well, this is such great information. So I am going to move over to a little bit on your business career. So 847 doors. And this is a big number. This is the, I think, the work-life balance. We've gone over like a lot of this, you know, heavy personal life work, which I think is so important. But, you know, you did that also. This is a big portfolio, 847 units. You know, how did you do it? You had your kids going through this. You had your wife. You met her when you were 21.
Yeah.
And you built this amount of units. So tell us about that. Tell us about how that was getting started. You know, how your kids were when you were, you know, building this large portfolio and this business that you have, which is, you know, doing very well and you know, we'd love to hear more about.
Yeah. Well, I want to give you some background before I dive in to talk about building the real estate, you know, because I don't want you to think that I just went literally from living in that trailer, dirt broke by myself to being able to start buying real estate. Because again, like anything, it does take work, you know, so that happened in like 2002, somewhere in that range. And I didn't really start getting into real estate until 2009. You know, so I had, what is that, 7-ish years of working on myself and that relationship and that belief, right? That's really what it took. And during that time, I moved out of that trailer and I bought my first home in like, I don't remember, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there, I bought that house. This is where we lived. This is where I raised my kids for several years in this house, but I was working a long ways away from home. And so was my wife, and my kids were going to school, right? A long ways away. So we had 3 cars every single day that would go from our house to school and work and stuff. And we were driving about 25 miles one way, 3 times every single day. And so you do the math on that, right? You're talking 150 miles a day that we're driving. And this is like 2009, roughly. And so you look at the fuel prices back in 2009, they were really high. I sat down and I did the math and I figured out that I could move 25 miles closer to where we worked and went to school. And I could save almost enough money to pay for a second mortgage. So I bought a house.
Wow.
Now I have 2 houses in 2009. Well, no one was buying houses in 2009, right? So I had my other house, my first house, I tried to sell it and nobody would buy it. So what do you do with a house you can't sell? You rent it out.
Put a tenant.
Yeah, you put a tenant in it. You rent it, right? And so that's exactly what I did. And that's the precipice of how I started in real estate was I had a house I couldn't sell, so I had to rent it. And I sat down and I looked at it and I'm like, I'm making a couple hundred bucks a month on this thing and I'm not doing any work. Let's go do it again. So as I started in the single family space first, right? That's really the point of this. And I was buying houses. I was buying things from auctions. I was buying things from wholesalers. I was flipping houses. And then I discovered what's called the BRRRR strategy. So you buy, you rehab, you rent, you refinance it, get all your cash back out. And so I actually built a fairly large portfolio of single family duplexes and triplexes over the course of about 10 years.
This is like 09 to 2019.
Yeah, 09 to 2019, exactly. So that 10-year span from 2009 to 2019, I actually did over 100 real estate transactions in the single family and small multifamily space. Below 5 units, 4 units and lower. I actually joke that I've done more real estate transactions than most realtors in my town.
Yeah, you probably have.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have. Yeah. Were you using other people's money during this time?
Yeah, I had several hard money lenders, a couple of people that were actual like investors, things like that, that were helping me, you know, and giving me money and I was paying them back and that type of thing. Never like a syndication, anything like that, but definitely had, you know, friends and family giving me money yet.
And you've done a good job with growing because now you raise capital. You raise a lot of money, actually. And were these same investors that you were building your book of business with the same investors you have today? Or is there a transition to different type of investors? Or is it
Like, how has that process been?
Definitely, there's been a transition, right? The people I was working with before, not a lot of them understand or see the vision of larger multifamily like that. They really want to be able to walk up and touch the building, you know? So they were really focused on local properties that were right here. But the problem is, so 2019, I'm sitting here looking at my portfolio and, you know, I have five kids that are mostly teenagers at this point, right? I have an amazing wife that's still supporting me and pushing me. I have a full-time job, an actual W-2 job, which, and I could tell you the reason I did that, I don't know right now, but that's a whole other story. And I own my own financial firm. I was doing investments. I had people help people investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And then I had this giant portfolio of single family houses and duplexes and triplexes. So I was essentially working three full-time jobs. And so I looked at my life and I said, you know, the amount of real estate I'm going to have to acquire to replace these other two incomes, it's going to take me another 10 years, 20 years maybe in the single family space. So I had to do something different. And so I spent all of 2019 just learning everything I possibly could about commercial real estate. And I read, you can see back here, there's hundreds of books. I read every book I could find on commercial real estate. I learned about apartments. I learned about self-storage. I learned about mobile home parks, industrial, development. I was just, 2019 for me was this like learning junkie mode. And I finally settled on apartment buildings because I had all this rental experience. That was my reason. All these other asset classes, they're still good. They're great. There's a lot of great asset classes out there, but I had the experience. So that's the reason I went to apartments. And so in 2020, I decided to go full bore into multifamily. And I started selling off all of my single family and rolling all that money into multifamily. I joined a mentorship group to help me buy apartment buildings. And that was a great experience. I later became a coach with that mentorship group where I was actually teaching people how to buy apartment buildings. I did that for a couple of years. And then I realized I'm going to run out of money. Because even though I had this big portfolio, I had a fairly large net worth. Eventually, that goes to zero. So I figured out that I had to learn how to start syndicating, which is where you pool people's money together to buy bigger buildings. And to do that, I joined another mentorship group where it's all about raising capital and bringing investors together and how to attract people to your properties. And that's really been my focus now for the last couple of years, is finding big buildings and then helping people invest in those big buildings.
That's fantastic. And so in your coaching business, so you also are a coach.
Yeah.
So tell us more about that business. I mean, that's fantastic also. So you help other people really do what you are achieving.
Yeah. Well, I've done a couple of different versions of coaching. It's really evolved over the last couple of years. My very first coaching experience was with a big group that had, you know, 400 students, 500 students. And they would assign me a series of people to coach one-on-one inside that group. And then I actually helped a company launch their own coaching program from scratch. They'd never had anything before. And I helped go in there and design it. It's been about 6 months really helping them get off the ground. And that was always planned to be a short-term thing. I was just helping them launch it. And then currently today, I just coach people one-on-one, right? So somebody says, I want to get started buying apartments. And we just do it on a one-on-one basis. I am toying with the idea of launching my own group program in the near future to help people get started buying apartment buildings.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, there's a long transition here. You started doing the house in 2009 up to 2019. And, you know, going back to, you know, I'll call it the work-life balance. Now you got five kids and you're going through this process. You know, how often were you home? Were you on the road a lot? You know, how many markets were you buying houses in? Or you said it was all Magic Valley. Is that correct?
All right where I live. Yeah.
That's a lot of business. I mean, for 10 years, so you're talking, you know,
10 deals a year, constantly doing deals.
Yeah. Yeah. All the time. And so the work-life balance was I took the kids. I involved the kids, you know, like they'd go to houses with me that when I was going just to drive by one, I would throw a kid in the car and they'd go drive around with me. As long as it wasn't a safety hazard, like, you know, like a really bad construction zone or something like that, they were with me all the time. And I just tried to involve them in the business as much as I could.
That's awesome. That's something I really want to do with my son once he's of age. Trevor, you?
Yeah, me too. And are any of them involved in real estate now? Or are you working with any of them currently?
No, I'm not. I wish I were, but I guess that one of the negative things about that happens with entrepreneurs sometimes, right? So we do burn the candles at both ends, and we work really hard. All of my kids have decided at this point in their life that they don't want to work that hard, and they want to be W-2 employees, and they want to go to work for 8 to 5 and come home and be able to live the life they want to live. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the life they want. You know, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't fit my lifestyle. But I attribute it to they saw how hard dad worked. They knew that it wasn't always sunshine and rainbows, right? Like sometimes, truthfully, sometimes we had to eat ramen noodles because I had to put all this money into a house. It happens. So I think they wanted more stability and more peace of mind.
Yeah, hopefully that maintains. I always had the idea of wanting to have a W-2 job that paid enough and was able to allow those things. And I always just found that the market just wasn't stable. You know, I was working for a company up until 2009 when the great financial crisis happened. And, you know, I thought I had a stable position and turned out not so much. You know, and it is one of those things where, you know, my goals for that kind of thing just changed over time, where I realized if I wanted to do more, or wanted to achieve more, or wanted to promote, that, you know, in many ways, when you were in that W-2 role, it was a learned experience that wasn't always the way, you know, you wanted it to be one way, and there's how it actually is. You know, and it's funny, my dad had a very similar, he just told me this just recently, that his father was an entrepreneur, and my family ran Mexican restaurants through New Mexico, Arizona, and Los Angeles. My grandparents did. And then my father, when he was very young, was a cook in those restaurants. My family has a lot of these great Mexican recipes. I'm actually a very good Mexican cook, actually, just for anyone who's listening. But my dad just said, you know, he saw how hard his dad worked and he wanted to have a more stable position. So he started working as a federal probation and parole officer. And that was in some ways limiting at the time. He had a great retirement, you know, and that's what actually the benefit for him. But he said it flat out. He said, exactly what you did. He said, you know, I saw how hard my dad worked, and his dad had some definite, you know, career ups and career downs when they were operating those restaurants, things that happened in business. And he said he saw that. So yeah, it's definitely not a lone sentiment by any means.
Well, Senator, I mean, I guess it's going to get personal, but how well are your positions in real estate cash flowing right now for you?
It's more, I've been more focused on the net worth side of things than on the cash flow side of things. We, you know, we pulled out of a bunch of cash flowing single family houses, and we rolled them all into multifamily syndications. And when we did that, we put a lot of things into the value add space. So when you do a value add apartment, building apartment, you're only like, usually you're a year to 2 years before you start really cash flowing, right? So the last couple of years, the answer to that has been almost zero. Now we're finally getting to that point where we're getting cash flow back and we're getting it to come in on a regular basis. And, you know, we're able to pay all the bills and work on that. But yeah, the net worth really has been the growth.
So you're looking, your strategy right now is to have a big payday in the next few-ish years.
Yes.
And then right off into the sunset?
Well, actually, so my dream is to be a full-time passive investor. That's like my dream. You know, so what I'm going to do is when I have a big cash flow event or a cash out event of some kind, I'm going to take a certain amount of that money and I'm going to put it into other people's LP positions. You know, the goal is there to generate that cash flow at that time. And then, of course, I'm not a sit on the beach kind of guy. So I'll take the other half of it and I'll put back into my own positions to do it again, right? To keep that cycle going. It's always been the goal is focus on the net worth first. I actually joke sometimes that I am the poorest millionaire you'll ever meet, right? Because all of my stuff's in net worth, right? But, you know, the cash, the monthly cash flow, yeah.
So you want to be an active passive investor, LP positions, but constantly growing it is what I heard. Is that accurate?
Yes, yeah,
so
that's the goal, is like always to be active. I can't sell my couch. I'd be bored.
Yeah, I don't have any plans to retire ever.
To me, retirement means working because you want to, not because you have to.
Working on whatever you want, whenever you want.
Right. There you go.
Exactly.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I'd love to do something like you guys are doing right now. I'd love to just do a podcast and just sit around and talk to my friends, you know, and don't have to worry about the money, you know, like.
I wish that was the case.
If it makes you feel any better, Senate, I definitely still worry about money.
Maybe something.
Yeah. Stop. I was just going to, you know, I'm working on getting where, you know, Senate's at, man. I'm with you, dude. If you want to become full-time passive, you're going to be there way before me, bro.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, I will echo a little bit of what you said, and that this podcast has been great. You know, we've had some stories that have been on here that have been a lot more sensitive than I actually would have thought before we started this. And every one of them has had some pretty great insight for the listeners. They really have. Every one of them that we've had, you know, Trevor and I have kind of said, hey, you know, what'd you think about that one? And we go, whoa. You know, that was, you know, this was a piece that I didn't expect to get shared or something else. And I kind of have left the podcast going, wow, you know, I really do feel like, you know, because we're doing this to connect individuals, to definitely get people, to get them included into that understanding that they're not alone in whatever it is, you know, that they're dealing with as dads. You know, I think that was kind of my goal when we started was, you know, I had people kind of share with me when I became a dad, you know, you kind of get inducted into this, the dad circles, the dadness, people who, you know, you knew previously. But then there was still this other level of kind of not having always resources to go out and, you know, hear those other people who have similar stories. Because I'll tell you, from your story that you've shared with us, there are other people who've had some other stories that are, you know, not the same, but kind of harrowing. You hear these ones that were going, oh my gosh, you know, what a bomb that was, you know, kind of a thing. And every one of them that we've had also has had a really fantastic story, you know, overcoming the odds, or maybe not even overcoming the odds, but maybe thinking that they were, that, you know, the odds were so stacked against them and they found out they could do it for whatever the reason was. And we've had these guests that have just really been so great to have them on and share with other people who might be in that kind of imposter syndrome moment going, whoa, you know, I don't need to stay here. I can grow. I can overcome. I can build. I can do whatever it is. You know, and on the retirement front, yeah, for me, I don't ever want to retire. The giving back part, I think, is one that I'd like to figure out a little bit better. You know, that's one that I really want to work through to see if I can find a better, you know, way to have an outlet and, you know, do more charity works. That'd be my big goal.
That's great. I'm right there with you. I love to give back and support. I'm very, very active in the local chambers of commerce in my town. Like I really work really hard with them. And my wife, Carrie, is very active on, you know, the local foundations. She's a very big mental health advocate. She actually has it's funny, we're on Real Estate Dads and she has a podcast called Sick Moms. And she talks about the mental health struggles of moms.
Wow, that sounds very important.
Oh yeah, it's very important. And some of them get really intense, right? So there's some.
I bet they do.
Yeah, it's totally open and raw. And like they talk about, oh boy, it gets intense. And the point is because we want to do the same thing. We want to give back. We want to help. That's why I do coaching, right? Like I don't make a lot of money coaching. I do it because somebody helped me when I started. And I wouldn't be where I am today, you know, if Gino Barbaro hadn't helped me, I would not be where I am today. And so I do it because he did it.
That's great. That's great. You know, well, one topic, and, you know, I'm only coming back to this since we mentioned a second ago, but, you know, the sick moms, that's one on a Real Estate Dads podcast, which is not, I don't think this episode, but I've had several, you know, fathers tell me, you know, when they brought up, you know, there's been a postpartum moment at home, have it be relatively harrowing. You know, some of these situations where it's like, whoa, you know, and some individuals that, you know, you never would have really known, but you also find out how common it is and how prevalent that I've heard that to actually be way more than I ever thought prior to having people share it with me. So that's great that your wife's doing that. That sounds like a fantastic, you know, other piece that she's sharing with the world.
Yeah, it is great. I'm very grateful she's doing it. We didn't tell that part of my story, but I had one of those too. I mean, I was, hey, I get it. It happens, right? Like I remember one day I literally was laying on the front, on the living room floor of my trailer, right? And pounding my fists on the floor because I was so upset. You know, the kids were in bed and, you know, and I just was just depressed and didn't know what I was doing. It's real. It really is real. So I'm glad you guys are doing this and I'm glad she's doing what she's doing because we need to talk about it more.
Sen, this has been such a great interview. We're at the 1 hour mark. What are your thoughts here? Are we, do we have anything else we want to cover?
I feel like I got way more than I bargained for already. I'm kind of flabbergasted and just impressed with the story that Sen just told and grateful that I got to hear it. And as per the usual with these things, I got a ton of useful golden nuggets. I guess the answer is no, not so much. I don't even, you know, I feel like I just got fire hosed with just so much benefit right now from Senate. So I'm just like genuinely grateful, man, that you came on and shared with us. Really am.
I feel the exact same way. You know, my wife usually at the end of the day, you know, how's your day? You know, and every time I've had one of these podcasts, I go, oh my God, we had this guest on. And I tell her,
I don't want to say it in the sense of like, I'm a happy cry kind of guy in the movie. I don't cry when the person dies.
It's for me, it's when they do the thing.
They do the thing, they overcome the thing. You know, that's what I, you know, get choked up. You know, so I finish things. I'm glad Trevor appreciated that. and that's why I've been so pleased to have these stories.
Fantastic. You know, I really appreciate you being honest. I mean, just coming on and just sharing. I mean, I was totally waiting for like, I had a totally different expectation of the show prior. I was gonna be like, fine, kids. It was T-ball and soccer. I was totally expecting there to be this story of like juggling the five kids. And I just am so thankful that you gave us this other piece of knowledge that I, when I hear this, I go, there are people who need to hear this.
I mean, I'm totally going to, I'll admit it to you guys right now. I'm going to talk to my wife about coaching. I think that's, I've been curious about it. I've been curious about it for a while, you know, for years. And so that's like, thank you. Hey, thanks for sharing.
Always do it when it's going well, right? Because you want to get better. And the thing is, Max, I have all those stories too, right? We did T-ball. My girls were in cheerleading and gym. The boys were all in football or baseball or something like that. But and everybody has that, right? So let's talk about the real stuff, the hard stuff. That's why I decided to go that route, you know?
Oh, I'm glad you did. Yeah, absolutely. I have a personal therapist that I go see, and I have taken my wife to go with me to see her previously, you know, and mine is old. And I mean, like I'm kind of always waiting to get an email saying she's retiring, and she was referred to me by a friend when we first started going to go see her. And I've always appreciated her because she does not pull any punches. She's just straight up, you're doing this wrong. Don't do that. Do this. You know, and I always thought therapy was supposed to be me sitting on a couch talking about my issues with my parents or whatever. And no. None of that. It's all just the most active, like, this is what you need to do. And it is funny because she's a therapist, but I would really describe her more as a coach. And the fact that she's old is this piece that's odd in like this weird sense of like being this wise older person who I've like listened to as a result of her just directness of both experience and also just like do this. And then those things that I've done, I've always been thankful for her engagement in regards to advice. Because the therapists that I've seen who have been a little more on the, you know, let's just talk through things have not been as they're beneficial as this one. But yeah, no, I'm a big advocate.
You know, unless somebody has like serious trauma, you know, that a coach is better than a therapist for most people.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm not really sure how much therapy I've gotten from this. I really describe it more as coaching, you know, kind of a thing. And because of the stuff we go through, yeah, like, you know, I think it's pretty accurate. I think the idea of therapy is a little more based on that kind of view that I had, with more of the couch and the internal view. And on a total tangent to this, you know, one thing that I've heard recently about a lot of, you know, kids' issues in today's world about talking about their feelings is that there are some ways where it's constructive and there's other ways where it becomes not constructive because they're overly repeating problems that are not actually as big as they're making them on an internal basis, but because they're repeating them over and over and over again, there's not actually a step to fix. It's just this kind of repeat situation of wallowing and in that sense, you know, falling down in that way. And that's something that, you know, I think about in regards to, you know, work hard, do the things you're supposed to, get accomplishments, get confidence, get your kids confidence, get your kids to do the things that get them the skills to be able to progress and overcome, you know, all of life's curveballs and punches and, you know, navigating, you know, what we all need to be, you know, the dads who want to for our families.
One thing that you said about the repeating the problem over and over again, it's almost like affirmations. You know, you've all heard affirmations or incantations and you're supposed to say positive mantras to yourself. Well, but if you say negative things or you just talk about the negative things over and over, the same thing's going to happen, right? So you got to focus on the positive and talk about the positive.
It's silly, but it's so true. It's like, you know, you turn everything into always look for either the positive or the lesson, which is a positive. Don't complain about anything you're not going to do something about.
Yeah. That's the truth. That's the truth. If you're talking about it, it's time to, you know, attack it.
I can't stand that anymore. If I hear that in my house, I'm like, stop. If you're not going to, you know, especially with the kids, if you're going to cry about it, I'm taking it away, right? You're never getting it again. Go to your room and cry.
That should be on our accountability call, Trevor.
What's that?
If you're whining about something, like, hey, your job is to fix it, not to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Oh, you know who told me that?
Arnold.
I got to read that book. You're telling me to read his book. I got to read his book.
It's all the same stuff that we know about positive mental attitude, right? It's like the gap and the gain or seven habits, all the stuff that we've all read, right? But the Arnold version, where he's just like, you know, basically he's just like, stop being a bitch.
Hey, he's right. Hey, before we cut this, Sennett, how do guests get in contact with you?
Best thing is just my website, SennettEskridge.com. All of my socials are on there. I've even got some free resources. I have a book coming out. It's going to be on there. Download for free. Also, I have a course, Passive Investing 101, completely free of charge.
Great. And we'll also have links to Sennett and his website on our Real Estate Dads podcast website. And if you are a listener and you've got a fantastic story about dadness, work-life balance, amazing story of overcoming the odds, please get in contact with us and also join us on the Slack channel where we have our Real Estate Dads Slack channel where we go through deals and connect the dads who are listeners on the show. Sennett, thanks so much. We appreciate you. And we will look forward to getting an update from you, hopefully, on another episode.
Thanks for having me.